great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we welcome Tracy Guns, founding member of LA Guns and currently part of Tracy Guns League of Gentlemen and part of the Las Vegas show, raiding the Rock Vault at Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio at www.sweetwater.com. And now here are your hosts, Jeff Flo to the Izzo Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. We have a great show for you tonight. This is going to be really fun. Hey, Scott, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Did you notice that stutter wouldn't have worked? If I didn't stutter in the middle of that opening, it wouldn't have all worked out in timing. It was all planned.
That was perfect. Yeah. I like that. That was great.
If you do it twice, it's jazz.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I just want to mention
a little scatting.
I just want to mention that I took a look at your video that you did on the Selenium channel for the Audio Technica. That is an amazing little wireless pedal. It's really nice.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, I did a cool little stereo effect thing at the end that I think people should check out. It's pretty fun to little do. And I've been checking out a couple new pedals that were sent to me. I've been checking out the TC Electronic Ditto X2, which is really cool. It's a little looper pedal. Mm-hmm. I've been having a ton of fun with that. It even does a little reverse feature, so you can get a little Hendrix action going on. Pretty fun.
That's cool.
And then also, speaking of Hendrix, I was checking out the new MXR Univibe.
That's, yeah.
Which is really cool.
I'm waiting to hear a good...
Oh, no, that's it.
Oh. We're going to talk
Hendrix.
In a few seconds. We're going to talk about this amp because the amp that he's using is just incredible. You will not believe
it's massive.
It's just massively
and heavy.
Yes,
heavy. Yeah.
It took a couple of roadies and three guys to bring it in. So
it's true. Yeah.
That was me, I think.
But anyway.
But yeah, so there'll be some videos on that. Actually, I'll be doing working on the Ditto X2 right now, and I'm using my double neck Gretsch to do that. So
okay. I also saw you posted a video of your dad. He was playing.
I didn't post that. That was my dad that posted that.
He posted that.
I liked it.
You liked it.
It was my dad playing a little Johnny Rivers and some other country tune on.
But he was using a pedal steel, right?
Yeah.
I didn't get a chance to listen to it, but anyway, yeah. It's cool.
Very country. Together Again, I believe it's one of the three tunes that he does.
Together.
There we go, that's Again.
Yeah. My mom plays pedal steel. So. Yeah.
Okay. So anything else going on? Anything you want to mention coming up on your videos?
No, just the Ditto X2, and then I'll be doing a Univibe shootout between the sort of old Univibe, not the original one, because I don't have that kind of money. talking about the one that they made like 5 years ago and they stopped making. So we'll be doing a shootout between that. And then, for our call, anyone that's listening and want to call in, actually, you probably want to call in because we have a giveaway.
Oh.
So let's just say the first caller that calls in, we're giving away a Hot Tone Analog Chorus True Bypass pedal here that you'll hear live played by Tracy
cool.
Guns himself.
And this is a new... This is a new pedal, relatively.
Yeah, this is a brand new line that Samson is taking over U.S. distribution for. I think there's 14 or 15 pedals in the line. They sell for about $80, so they're affordable for the entry-level guitar player as well as for the pro-level player like Tracy. And they're just great little tone machines. They really are amazing.
They're huge. They're like the size of a...
They're really heavy.
A cracker. Really. They're actually pretty small, so they're
the
perfect for a pedal board.
Yeah. So. They're the size of a biscotti.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, listen, we'll take a break real quick, and we'll come back with our guest, Tracy Guns. It's going to be fun. He's got an incredible guitar here. And again, we'll talk more about this huge, humongous amp that he has with him. So we'll be right back.
Hi, Kenny Burgle here, one of the many guitar freaks at Sweetwater. We're so proud to support the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Show. Hey, just a reminder, the free Sweetwater Gear Fest is coming up June 6th and 7th here at Sweetwater in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Famous artists and manufacturers will be giving free workshops and clinics. Just go to sweetwater.com/gearfest to see more details or call us at 800-222-4700 to speak to a professional guitar enthusiast directly. This week, the Flow welcomes Tracy Guns of LA Guns fame, brought to us by Samson Technologies. Also in on the forming of Brides of Destruction, Contraband, and of course, the initial lineup of Guns N' Roses, Tracy is a veteran rocker who will share some of his wisdom and guitar enthusiasm with Jeff and Scott, so don't miss it. Dig this week's Flow, and don't forget GearFest at sweetwater.com/GearFest or call us at 800-222-4700. Thanks for listening, and this is Kenny Burgle with Sweetwater saying, rock on with the Flow.
All right, everyone, you are listening to Jeff and Scott on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, and I'm Paul Reed Smith from PRS Guitars, and that's kind of what's going on. Enjoy the show.
All right, well, welcome back. And I just want to welcome to the show officially, although you did hear him jamming a little Hendrix earlier, Mr. Tracy Guns.
Hey, welcome. This is great.
It's an honor to have you in here.
All right. That was my intro music. Yeah.
There you go.
Sounded good.
And also Andy.
Andy Winston from Samson Technology.
Hello, hello, hello.
We want to thank them for bringing
for
Tracy
a long
in.
Time, man.
We can go back.
Yeah, we're
old together. Old together.
Yeah, we were talking about teeth today. That's, yeah.
That's how old we are.
I think you guys are veterans together, is what you want to say.
Yeah.
But it's great to be back here, guys. Thanks for having us back, and thanks once again for having another one of our artists here.
That's great.
Appreciate it. Well, so Tracy, let's just get started. So you in the back in 1983, you formed LA Guns.
Yeah, something like that.
You were out on the Sunset Strip, the famous Sunset Strip, when it was actually cool.
It was cool.
It's cool now, but it was way cooler back then. Let's just admit
it. It was.
So, what was it like back then? Just playing. I mean, was it as crazy as we all think? I mean, you're back there playing with.
I think so. It was weird because I was really really young and. Initially, I would go to the Starwood when I was about 13 or 14 to see punk rock bands, because it was like live music. Like all of a sudden, I discovered live music, and I didn't care what it was. It was loud, and so so I started going there. Then I went to the Troubadour when I was about 14, and I saw a band called Wizard, and they were a power trio, and they reminded me of Rush. And that was it. I was like, Hey, I can do this. And I've been playing guitar since I was 6 years old, so I was like, had to figure out what to do with it.
Right.
I was like, oh, I can do that, I thought to myself. And then I was really in, kind of by that age, by the time I was 15, I was kind of over really listening to, the only two bands I really listened to at that point were, Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin, And Hendrix came later. And the Stones, because my mom was listening to Hendrix and the Stones, so I didn't want to like it, She was playing country, and she was rootsy, and I wanted the ugly stuff. And so I was in 10th grade, and I saw a picture of Motley Crue in Music Connection magazine. And at the time, they weren't the Motley Crue that everybody knows of now. They were like a horrifying punk rock band with long hair. I was like, I got to see these guys. That looks crazy. I did. I went and I saw them at the Troubadour, and they, Mick Mars had, 100 billion Marshall stacks and a Les Paul, and Nikki Sixx was the scariest looking thing I'd ever seen in my life. And I just said, this has got to be what rock and roll is, man. It was just unbelievable. And they were so loud, I go, I can do this. I can do this. I want to do this, And so I really don't give Nikki and those guys enough credit, when I do interviews. But they had a big influence on, the shock value of rock and roll could be. Like, I didn't get to see Alice Cooper the first time around, et cetera. So I saw that, and I thought, wow, these guys are punk rock and metal at the same time. And the guitar player has, like, this kind of country thing going on. It reminded me of, Keith Richards and stuff that my mom said was important to know, and like, you don't know nothing, Mom, But anyways, so that was, to me, the beginning of my Sunset Strip, was the Troubadour, which was on Santa Monica.
Yeah,
and,
actually.
And also the Starwood, which is on Santa Monica, mm-hmm. which, you know, you just translate north and like, okay, here we are. So by the time, the first time I saw somebody on the strip was Motley Crue with the Whiskey and the Roxy and the Whiskey. You know, I mean, they just kept playing every 2 weeks and a scene had really started, you know, and it was like they had started the scene, you know, and the girls looked great, you know, and I was younger than everybody, so I was just kind of like following, like, hey, you know, I'm a rocker, you know, like, don't you like me? Look, I made my hair stick up, you know, like all these kinds of things. And so I was just in high school and had started what eventually became L.A. Guns was my first band called Pyrus. And I'm sad to say that the lead vocalist, Mike Jagos, just passed away a couple wow. weeks ago, and I just found out about it. So that's pretty sad. That's the first person I ever wrote music with. And, you know, we were, by that time, you know, first two Maiden records were out, the first two Def Leppard records were out, the first Motley Crue record was kind of out. And we kind of looked at that and the Scorpions and things for, you know, for influences. And then Randy Rhoads came out, you know, and I was like, oh, you know, forget all this stuff, you know. It's all about Randy now, and you guys are losers, and you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, whatever a 14, 15-year-old kid say. But anyways, we started playing at Gazzari's, you know, that's where we started. You mm-hmm. know, it was Gazzari's and, you know, some other odd clubs in West L.A., and Club 88, I think, and Music Machine and stuff like that. But as time rolls on, you know, we became the L.A. Guns, which formed into Guns N' Roses eventually and then back to L.A. Guns. It was kind of this in-between the Motley Crue, Rat, Wasp era, and then right before the Jane's Addiction era. So we were kind of had this hold of like, yeah, we dig what Motley's doing, but there's too much makeup and not enough blues. And but we weren't willing to get as groovy as Jane's Addiction. You know, it's like, oh, it's still got to be rock. It's got to be like the Stones and Aerosmith and, you know, with some Van Halen and Randy Rhoads guitar licks. I remember like, yeah, we could be like that, but there's got to be some Van Halen, you know, whatever. And, but the scene, as far as the scene, aside from the music, you know, you could pretty much put into your brain whatever imagination you could think of, and it definitely happened. And I'm sure it happened in the 60s as well. You know, mm-hmm. the strip, you know, Marty's Beanery, all these things, because my parents went through that scene. So it's very similar, you know, and you know, a lot of stuff, there was a lot of fun before AIDS, you know, and there was a lot of stuff before, a lot of fun before people started ODing, you know, for a second wave of OD in the rock scene. And so people were doing things. I was more of an observer than a partaker, you know, being the younger guy and stuff like that. It was mostly just women. I was just into women. And then when I was 20, I got signed in L.A. Guns, and they're like, what the hell did we get signed for? What are we going to do? You know, I didn't understand what it was. And the next thing you know, our record was out. I was on a tour bus, and I was scared. You know, and I'm still scared because I'm 48. And I still don't know what I'm doing.
So what? I mean, what kind of gear did you use back then? And I mean, how did
Marshalls and Les Pauls?
Well, I guess that's all you need, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think I worked for my dad for a year, from 11 to 12. And he bought me a 77 Les Paul from West LA Music. It was a Les Paul custom with a natural finish, light on maple on top, mm-hmm. rosewood size, or mahogany size. And that was my first, you know, real guitar. My mom had bought me like a little black Les Paul Junior looking thing when I was a little bit younger. But I got that Les Paul. And my first amp, my first real amp, was a Yamaha G100 112,
nice.
Which is the loudest amp ever invented, besides maybe a Lab Series, like the one that B.B. King plays. That thing's loud. But I played out of that with a...
Is that Solid State?
Solid State.
Yep.
I have one in the trunk of my car right now. A 50-watt version. I love them. That was what I started with, so I still have them.
Yeah.
I have a 212. I got a lot of stuff. But anyways, my first gigs were with that amp with a... I had a flanger, a purple one made by Boss that I used, you know, overused, you know, for a good 2 or 3 months. I got everything. Oh, look, that's the sound, you know. And with a Distortion Plus going in front of it. So it was like, yeah, it was pretty cool. And then some guy swindled the Yamaha off me from the recycler when I was 13 or 14, tried to convince me that the Music Man HD65 was the way to go with a Rode cabinet 412, which had Altec speakers in it. It was so loud. He goes, it's louder. You need this. And I'm playing on TV with my 59 Les Paul. I'm like, what's a 59 Les Paul? You know, and he's in my bedroom. I'm like, I'm still living with my mom. I still have like you know, a mobile hanging from my ceiling. Yeah. You know, I got this guy, you know, with a 59 Les Paul, like stealing my amp from me. And I'm like, oh, cool, man. Yeah, this one's bigger. Okay, this is cool. I'll take it. I immediately traded that for some crazy Marshall combo with 410s in it. You know, it was a brown Tolex Marshall solid state preamp section, I believe. You know, tube power section. Sounded good enough, you know, with the Distortion Plus, everything sounded great. You know?
Right.
You know, and I had a micro chorus because Randy Rhodes had a real stereo chorus, so I got a micro chorus. And I remember playing at Hollywood High School with, we were still called Pyrus, and I had the tone, man. You know, in my mind, I had the tone, you know. And,
so, I mean, back then, were you as concerned about tone, or were you like...
Yes.
You
yes,
were? Okay.
Yes, absolutely. But it was a different kind of concern for tone than when you're older and really care about tone. It was like, how could I be more obnoxious than the last guy that played? You know, I mean, it was more about, you know, when Randy Rhodes and Hendrix play live, the feedback happens instantaneously. I want that.
Right.
You know, I always wanted to control the feedback and make that part of my style. And that lasted... till yesterday? No, I don't know. Like I played with that tone, you know, completely out of control until I was probably, you know, 33 or 34. And then I started really appreciating what an amplifier sounds like, you know.
Right.
And what a pickup sounds like going through the right amplifier, or the speaker gets fuzzy on its own. And that's when I feel I learned how to play the guitar. So it was well after L.A. Guns and Guns N' Roses, you know, where I was like, hey, okay, no wonder Ted Nugent uses no gain. You don't need to. You just need to be good at what you do. And you can still get feedback together, you know. That's what pedals are for anyways. But, you know, I went through years of when I was 18, I did the Gunslinger with BC Rich, which was just an Eddie Van Halen guitar, you know.
Right.
But Bernie Rico came. I went there wanting Mockingbirds and Bitches and... Yeah, we'll make you whatever you want, kid. I got this idea, you know, you're the guns guy. We got this Gunslinger, your signature model. I'm like, okay. You know, really? Cool. We'll paint whatever you want on it. All right. I want a yellow one. No, we'll paint whatever you want on it. I'm like, I want a green one. You know, like I didn't get it. And so we put out the signature model of guitars, you know, and my first ones had flames on them. They were badass. And then... he sold a million of them, and he never paid me anything, but he gave me as many guitars as I wanted.
That's
like,
cool.
It's like, hey, you want another guitar? You know, so like you know, he was awesome, man. You know, he was just like great, and he always like wanted me to bring my girlfriends out there so we could take pictures of them for the advertisements and stuff. He was really a cool guy. He was more Sunset Strip than any of the guys that I hung out with. You know, coolest guy in the world. And so I had my signature series before I was 19. And it enabled him to license the company for a couple of years, you know, and do that thing. So that was a really effective thing. It was his first consumer-friendly price guitar. Later I found that out. I didn't know that when I was that young. But so then I, you know, I had a whammy bar on my guitar for a while. And by the time we got signed, I was 19 when we got signed. I knew how to use it. You know, I was just copying Eddie Van Halen. And
was that a Floyd?
It was a Floyd.
On the BC Riches.
Yeah. I had, before that, I failed to mention that I traded my really nice Les Paul that I worked for a year for a Mighty Might with a Fender stock tailpiece on. You know, like, oh, it's like Eddie Van Halen's, I want it. Mm. You know, just like straight across, guy at some guitar shop on Fairfax. He's like, I don't know. Okay. Like, you know, walk out with this like $200 guitar.
We all have those stories, I think.
Right, I think you know? Everybody, yeah. You know, taste of the month. But the Les Paul was definitely always the easiest, you know, neck length, the mushiest sound, you know, like the most good, friendly guitar for me to play. You know, I always liked it with the fuzz pedal on and, you know, some kind of tape delay running. And, you know, I always did that. And, then I went on tour and like those things break, you know, and I didn't realize, you know, so I spent like the first 2 years of touring constantly getting things repaired, you know, and like looking for other Echoplexes and ending up with EP4s because nobody wanted them and they sounded funny, and then I spent too much on a tube Echoplex and it sounded like crap. And, you know, it was all about the EP3, you know, and yeah, I still have them. I don't know why. I just bought an Ampex 351, which is the tape machine that Eddie Kramer, they modeled the Eddie Kramer tape delay after. I just bought one. I don't know why. You know, there's something about
it. Did you ever use the Space Echo, the one with the big loop that went forever?
Yeah. Space Echoes. And I also had a Benson Echo Rec for a while, which was an aluminum disc. Very cool. Very, very cool. I really like effects. I really like delay. Delay is a great friend.
But when you were playing live and you started playing, you know, the bigger venues and stuff, mm-hmm. did you find yourself just cranking the amp up, or you always use the distortion in front of it?
No. By the time I remember, I bought, we were on tour with AC/DC. I was 21 years old. We were playing the Meadowlands. And at the time, I had a deal with Randall. And at the time, the biggest amp they made was the RG80,
mm-hmm.
Which is actually the amp I used on the first LA Guns record. I used an RG80 on mm-hmm. that. It just had really nice distortion. It was smooth, and you get a big thwack out of it. But they weren't loud enough. And all of a sudden, we were playing arenas. And I just, when you turn them up to a point, they start sounding bad. So my manager just happened to be in New York. I said, hey, man, it's time. You know, 15,000 people, and I got to have 3 Marshall stacks today. And he said, okay. So we went to, not Manny's, what's the other one? Is it Manny's?
Yeah, Manny's.
Well, there was Manny's. There was another one in New York. That
just as big as Manny's.
Rudy's.
No. Let's say Manny's.
Bill's. I don't know.
Yeah. Sylvia's. So we go in.
No, it was Sam Ash.
Right. So it was Manny's.
It was Sam Ash. Right. It's now owned. Yeah.
So we go into Manny's, they called Korg, and I guess we did get some kind of discount, and then I waited at the back of the arena, I remember, man, for the truck to show up, you know, for sound check. And they 3 brand new JCM, 1987 JCM 800s with the, you know, 6 cabinets. And they pull it in and plug my little pedal board up, fired them up, put them on about 2. It blew my face off. I'm like, yeah! And like, that's the only thing like I could hear on stage for the next 10 years was like these JCM 800s. Just like so loud, you know, and then all of a sudden you're not big anymore, and you know you're playing the Palomino, and I still have 3 Marshalls on stage, 2 Echoplexes, you know, and the sound man. I'm going, hey, my monitors, those monitors are half as loud as your amps. You know, turn your amps down. I started fighting with people, and then I discovered what is the amp I use? The 5.
The Class 5.
Class 5. Now I play Marshall Class 5.
Yeah, so yeah.
They make a lot more sense. Sound the same.
Well, you have a little 5-watt amp here for you. I'm with you, actually. This is, I don't know, what's the size? It's a little bit bigger than a deck of cards, I would say.
It's pretty little.
Yeah, and Andy, can you give us a description of what this is?
Yes, this is by Hot Tone Audio, and this is a 5-watt Class AB, and this is the sort of Marshall voice version. We make a Vox version and a heavy metal version. But as you listen to Tracy play, you'll hear this amp kind of bloom and do all those things that a tube amp's supposed to do, but there's no place to hide a tube in this thing. So when Scott and Jeff get the pictures up on the website, you'll see how tiny this is, and you'll hear how big the tone is.
Yeah, you'll hear how badly I'm out of tune, too. Me, 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 me.
Well, while you're tuning, so you kind of talk about how you're kind of like one of the inventors of what you call sleazy guitar. Is that correct?
That's what they say. Frankly, I get offended by it, but apparently, Tracy Guns, king of sleaze guitar. What's sleaze guitar?
Does it pay anything?
Yeah, like, what is it, though? Like, hey, that guy's guitar has syphilis. Like, yeah. I don't know. But I think it's this, you know, because honestly, Mick Cripps, who's the other guitar player in LA Guns, when we got together, he turned me on to Johnny Thunders, who I guess would be considered a sleaze guitar player. Some aspect. I think more sleazy looking than. So you can tell I'm still trying to like equate this. King of sleaze. And I really like Johnny, and I actually played with Johnny Thunders. And I adapted a lot of his style into the metal, which was, you know, trying to, but that guy's so cool, I have to be like him and Randy Rhoads and Jimmy Page and Hendrix, but I'm not black. But I do kind of have curly hair. Like, it's always about image, you know, when you're a kid. It's just like, man, but I really want to look like Ted Nugent. Nah, that's passe. You know, like this whole crazy thing. What were we talking about?
Well,
Sleaze guitar.
Sleaze guitar. But, I mean, maybe, you know, talk about how your sound was so distinctive back in there in the L.A.
Well, I think what people mistake for, you know, a definitive sound was a lack of great production. And I think that instance happens a lot, particularly in rock and roll music, because I think that the performance equals the happy listener, you know, when it comes to rock and roll. You know, Chuck Berry, you never really cared that his tone was awful. You just loved him, you know what I mean? It was like, my God, you know. And I think that you know, even Van Halen and the first couple of LA Guns things suffer from that thing, is like, wow, it sounds so weird, but I really like it. So that's a definitive sound, you know. But I'm not like Eddie detests that sound. I actually kind of like the way the first LA Guns records sound. And it's that Randall amp on the first one, you know, the RG80. Mm-hmm. You know, probably the impedance was mismatched and the ohmage was mismatched and it was just not working right. And I think I played a Warlock on most of that record. And people like that tone, you know. They go, how did you do that? And I go, you know, just really crappy equipment, you know. But think about it. I mean, me and you were listening to Jack White, yep. You know, and like most people, especially, you know, metal guys, they don't want to play out of a, you know, a Dan Electro amp or
a Supro guitar or something like that. Yeah.
You know, but those kind of crappy things, I think they can amplify your personality as a player.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think the route of a lot of the 80s guys, particularly myself, and I think CeCe DeVille suffers from this too, is that you have so much gain at a point that the human's not coming through. And because CeCe DeVille's an amazing guitar player. I mean, if you sat down with him on the corner of a stage and just with a couple of guitars and blow your face out, you go, wow, dude, why don't you play like that in the band? Ah, nobody cares, he would say. You know, and you go, well, you know, I care. you know, you're my friend and I want to say you're a good guitar player, you know. And he is a great guitar player. But at the time, it was about that sustain and being over the top and, you know, your soul kind of slipped in and out of your playing. It wasn't all about the soul at the time, you know. And that's kind of the thing that I understand why there is a stigma attached to that style of guitar playing, that style of music, that era of music, even more so than disco. At least with disco, it was about shaking your booty, you know. With 80s metal, it's about shaking your cock. And nobody at this point is like, oh, I really like that song because it makes me want to shake my cock. Nobody cares. You know what I mean? It was a time, it was an era, and it was fun for the people that were there. But it doesn't translate. Like, I can't.
Even when you're listening to Hendrix or even early Led Zeppelin, Jimmy Page, mm-hmm. you know, they weren't using that much gain. They would process, and you have more tone. I mean, Hendrix's sound, the different tones he got out of the guitar in an album was just incredible. But you need, when you just have all that gain, and I've noticed at NAMM, a lot of these real high gain amps, they all sound the same because it's just square waving it out and it's compressed.
A lot of it, what I think too, is the record companies get involved. So they take a purity of what a Sunset Strip scene is and they try to find the next band that's going to make them $1 million. And the way to do that is they water it down and they make it very palpable or palatable for everybody to listen to, not just people that are into that style of music. Then it gets into top 40 radio and then it falls off the charts just as fast as it came onto the charts because everything starts to sound the same.
Well, here's a great example. The popularity of that sound still exists in country music.
Yeah.
You know, big drums with lots of, you know,
lots of reverb, heavy guitar.
Heavy guitars, you know, like really heavy guitars. Yeah. You know, shredding guitar solos. And the lyrics are even worse than most of the bands from my era. It's just, people do like it. It's just repackaged in a way. But I got to say, you know, I've had a great experience as a guitar player making albums through all the years. Because particularly with LA Guns, first one was the Randall. Second one was the JCM-800, and that was like a serious guitar sound. It was like, wow, we put a mic in front of that, and now it sounds like this. By the time I was doing my third record, man, I had, you know, old Boogie amps and Fender amps and, you know, like really nice sounding stuff. And that's where I really started, at the ripe old age of 23, I started appreciating tone, you know. And you know, I mean, that's a lot happened in a very short amount of time. But then I'd get on stage and it was back to, you know, 17 Marshalls and the story. But in the studio, you know, and that was the same time that I was hanging out with guys like Rick Rubin and George Drakoulias, Michael James Jackson, Eddie Kramer. Like, I had become friends with more of the engineer-producer types at the time. Then musicians. I like the science of why Led Zeppelin sounded that way, you know, why did Hendrix sound that way, you know, and then they all told me, well, get rid of that pedal, first of all, you know, particularly Rick Rubin, man, you know, he would come in to rehearsal, and he'd go, that sounds great, now could you just plug your guitar right into the amp, and I'd go, no, why not, I go, because this is my sound, he goes, no, you're covering your sound, and then, you know, I'd go around and around with him, and eventually I wouldn't have the pedal, and then I'd work with somebody else, and I wouldn't have the pedal, and they'd go, hey, you know, your sound's different. I go, what do you mean? We need that big sound. Oh, you want the pedal. You know what I mean? So it's like, it was a very weird time, you know, because I was always doing studio work then too. So it was like weird. It's like, well, we want you for this, or we want you for that, you want for that. And like, you know, it would get down to the point where my tech was making more money than I was doing the sessions, because what people, you never knew what somebody wanted.
Yeah.
Because I went from playing on people's rock albums to playing and the new style of R&B, which isn't the kind of R&B you and I grew up on. You know, it's like more of a pop kind of thing. And they want, like, we want you to do kind of a Hendrix thing, but it's got to be clean. You know, but it's got to fit. It's got to this. So, you know, I'd have one coffin case with six guitars in it, and then, you know, Marshall, Fender, this, just to go into the Cherokee, you know. I got $200 to bring it over, to walk out, and I want cash, so, you know. Sometimes they give me a grand. Sometimes, oh, here's $100. Thanks. Like,
yeah.
And I just gave the guy $200.
So you found it more restrictive doing the session work, or did they let you experiment more?
No, they, you know, once you got the sound they wanted, you know, then, okay, now what do you got? You know what I mean? It's always kind of this thing. And I got lucky. I never had to read anything in any session work I ever had to do, because it was based on the popularity as a guitar player at the time. So,
but like, with your own stuff,
no.
Was it more strict because the band had a certain sound, or were you didn't, you know?
Yes, and I think I'm guilty of kind of putting those limitations on myself, especially for the first two records. I was young, you know. I was really focused on what I thought was going to be the next level of, you know, after Eddie, you know, Steve Vai was more contemporary at the time, you know, and stuff. And I just wanted to, like, try to maximize whatever it was, not realizing that the guys I was competing with were great musicians, as where I was just going on 100% adrenaline and feel at the time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But by the time, like I said, I got to the third record, and outside of, you know, the LA Gun stuff, it was always experimentation and trying to get something great, you know what I mean? And I understood how microphones worked, and I understood how it worked.
Well, there was also the pressure with the record companies. They want previous album. If your second album was a big hit, they didn't care that you wanted to go, oh, I want to do this. They, you know, the days of like the Beatles where you could just throw in Indian music, or you could do that. They didn't.
Yeah. No, it was a problem. It was a real problem for me, you know, and I feel bad, and then I don't feel bad, because the guy that signed us is this guy, Bob Scoro, who's an amazing character. And he signed LA Guns, and I asked him why. The energy. I'm like, what do you mean the energy? Like, it kind of, I didn't get it, you know what I mean? I was so young.
Mm-hmm.
And then we made the right second record for him. But by the time we got to our third record, I wasn't into that. You know, I wanted to record How Many More Times, you know, my own version. You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to do stuff. And my manager got him fired from PolyGram because of the rift.
Wow.
And, you know, and ultimately, he was right in what he was saying, you know, from a business standpoint and from a band character, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I always been a little delusional in thinking it's 1968 and anything goes, you know what I mean? And that's just, as a musician, that's just where I've always wanted to be.
Well, that was the golden day.
Right.
Where you could just, well, look at all the stuff that came out, all the different things that were happening at that time.
But we talk about that record company meddling again.
Yeah.
It's like, we're gonna make you fit a certain genre.
Well, by the time his band made it,
yeah,
it was a business. And even before, like in the early 70s, it was already starting, you know, it was all marketing, and it had already affected people.
Well, disco is a great example of that, of a high-energy music that is a little bit of dirt to it that appeals to younger people dancing and doing cocaine. You know what I mean? It's kind of after the psychedelic era of, oh, let's all get high and trip out and you know, let's make weird sounds, where somebody was smarter than me. At this point, they would listen to what I just said and go, okay, let's make some disco with some psychedelic. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know, this is how new music trends start. It's always a hybrid of things that were great at one time, and you reintroduce it to people that are younger, whatever kind of Molly or whatever they're taking these days. But, you know, unfortunately, that's one of the side effects of great music for kids, is that there's always some kind of nastiness.
Well, you say you had a lot of your music was a lot of feel at the beginning, and it's interesting because a lot of the groups that, you know, during the 70s, late 60s, early 70s, like going to a concert and seeing The Who,
right?
You know, you hear groups that kind of emulate them, but the attitude, there was a whole attitude. Not that they were, you know, being, you know, buggers about it, but they were basically there was a kind of a stance, you know. And it came across in the music, and it sounds to me like
LA Guns stuff was very much from that school of attitude. Yeah. You know, we had a British singer, so I really liked that. You know, Led Zeppelin's my favorite band. You know, like I got this British singer. You know, and the whole idea of LA Guns on paper behind the scenes was like, okay, we're going to put the Sex Pistols with Led Zeppelin, and this is going to be our band. And so that Who attitude is very much that mod, you know, anarchistic kind of thing, which is very appealing to kids, you know, who want to identify with something that's happening, like as Jerry Lee Lewis, you know, same thing. It's that attitude. It's like, hey man, you know, I'm the kids love me. I'm gonna do what I want. I make them happy.
And it helps if you're. It scares your parents.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah.
It scares you,
but not now.
But
you,
sucks. But a lot of it, like you were saying, the you know, if your guitar is a little out of tune, it didn't matter.
No,
because that vibe went through. That came through, and that was it. It was a feeling.
James Gurley from Big Brother and the Holding Company, man, on that live Janis record.
Yeah,
that's some of the best guitar playing I've ever heard in my life. And he's out of tune. Like, they never tuned the guitar. It's just like, oh man, you know, the lead solo and the opening solo in Summertime, man, it's like, dude, I want to drink that water, you know, what are you doing, you know. Fender twin amplifiers with the reverb turned up, you know, same with you know, Jefferson Airplane, you know, I mean, you listen to that stuff, they're pushing it, you know, they're trying to maximize what they have in the room at the time, you know, and that's a rock and roll attitude. It's like, hey man, you know, I want to be louder than that guy, you know. And that's funny. You see in the Hendrix documentary when Pete Townsend's talking about them, you know, I guess it's a Monterey, you know, who's going on first? I'm not following you. I'm not following. Well, if I'm going on after you, I'm going to do everything. You know, all of a sudden it wasn't about the music anymore. It was more about the attitude, more about, you know, more about your
day. Yeah, each guy was trying to talk to the other.
Yeah. Well, so right now you're playing in a Las Vegas show where you're playing everything.
I'm done with that, actually.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
I couldn't stand the heat. I got out of the desert, man. It was, yeah.
A little dry out there in the 702. Yeah.
But that was an amazing, amazing experience. You know, it was basically a cover band with me and Howard Leese from Heart, and then some guys that had been in other bands as like kind of hired guys. And we played like Hotel California, like note for note with the right tone, with the, you know what I mean? Like really analyzing and putting the blocks together, like how these songs would come across, with huge production, like really great laser production and stuff like that. And I did it for almost a year.
Wow.
You know, lived in the hotel and everything. It was crazy.
That must have been a trip.
It was different.
Well, I mean, with the pedal board here we have here from Hot Tone and then the little amp, I mean, is there some of those sounds you think you can duplicate and show us some of that stuff?
I don't even know if I remember any of those songs now. Let's see. Well, we did let's see. That warble is actually from the analog delay. Be this pedal company spokesman, man.
You should. Well, now, make a call for that.
I played Stairway to Heaven every night. That's a
sounds like a broken Echoplex.
It's really cool. Pedal. Now, he's using the little, just so everybody knows what's going on, he's using the little amp into a Marshall cabinet with a 112.
Right.
It's the satellite speaker for
the 110. That's the one. That's the 10.
Oh, that's a 10-inch. Okay. Yeah. And then these little pedals, are, I took a picture of them, and I'll post them later. They are so small. It's unbelievable.
Right, yep, so it's nice. There's steel housing, true bypass switching on these little guys. And what we like about them, as far from a Samson distribution end, $79. So they're kind of priced for the pro level like Tracy, but for the kids' first overdrive, for that kids' first cool delay pedal, I think we can get it and knock it out of the park with hot tone.
Right, and they're small enough. You could put a bunch of them on a pedal
exactly.
board.
Exactly.
Put them on a necklace.
Or put four of them on a very...
wants a necklace of them.
Put four of them on a very small pedal board.
Yeah.
You
know?
So just a blues pedal, it's like overdrive thing. Unbelievable. I mean, Dave Edmunds would lose his mind for that song. Because it said blues, I had to play a blues thing. It's a blues pedal. And then you've got one of these, which is
tremolo?
Yeah, but really good. Like you could do the whole wing ray thing, I think.
Yeah, you're getting that sound.
Yeah, I mean, that, like, so we already know that pedal's a winner. and then, they have a it's called a lift up, but it's the treble booster that like Townsend and okay. Brian May and mm-hmm. Paige.
Are so small, these pedals.
But it's such a big tone that comes out of them.
Yeah,
Jeff,
yeah.
What was I playing earlier? The Black
Sabbath. Oh.
Does that really well. That was their heavy metal. The Chunk. The Chunk is the gnarliest one, right?
That's the gnarliest that I have. We also make another pedal called Whip, which is more of an extreme heavy metal style distortion.
Hey, this is like an SD-1 or something.
Yeah.
Like, get that Def Leppard tone. These pedals are amazing. And then, reverb.
Was the reverb he was using before from the amp?
No.
Okay. That was delay.
That's all delay, and then he's got a reverb pedal as well.
Okay. So this. Got the shimmer switch.
Is it basically trying to emulate a spring reverb?
Yeah, so what I found that I like with this, Jeff, as opposed to using the reverb on my Fender Hot Rod DeVille where I have one knob to control everything, now I've got three knobs and a shimmer switch. So now I can actually put a little, almost like a chorus-type shimmer on the back end of the note on the reverb.
That is cool. That is really cool. Also, real quick, Tracy, tell us about this guitar.
Oh, this is my best friend made me this guitar. It's got a Strat neck with a rosewood fingerboard.
I think anybody that makes your guitar is probably a best friend, right?
Right. That's true. That's true. Well, we share the same birthday. He's a New York guy. He's a music producer, and he knows I have my own signature guitar with Dean Guitars. Is basically a 51 Nocaster with an extra fret and a Floyd Rose, and it's just for modern guys. But it's based off a 51 Nocaster, and he wanted to build me kind of an Esquire-ish kind of guitar, mm-hmm. With a really cool Bigsby one pickup, and he's wired it so when it's in the lead position, these don't work. It's directly
then it's straight pickup through.
Right. And then that one you have. Let's see. Yeah, you have volume and tone, and up front. There's like you put something on there to where it's EQ different and only the volume works.
I just want to mention while he's playing, the way he's got the neck set, it's a Tele body. The way he has his neck set up, the neck is high off of the body. It's a thin neck, but it allows for this Bigsby that he has on here, because usually the bridge is usually too high, because a standard Tele, the neck lies low into the body. So he's got it up. So if you see the guitar, the neck's high, and it allows him to get a low action on the and he has a metal shim in there to tilt the neck a little bit, so it gets even a little bit of lower action. It's really nice.
Yeah, I really love this guitar. You know,
yeah, that Bigsby is smooth.
You know, it really gets down, you know, as far as... I was a humbucker guy forever. I mean, I still use my Les Pauls, but there's something about the 51 Melcaster pickup, the bridge. It's just so dirty, you know? It's so like boogie, it's really expressive with your right hand. You know?
Yeah, you're getting. Play a little bit where you lay back a little bit,
right,
and then dig into
That's
it.
That's the thing.
That little amp is just really responsive. You really get a lot of little nuances.
It's that Townsend thing where you a little sharp little open chord and then bang on the big chord like right. that, and the amp responds well to what you're sticking into it.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say, this amp is crazy.
5 watts, $99.
Yeah, your neighbors won't
call the cops. Tracy, you got to use like 10 of them and stack them up, you know?
No, I'm going to.
But you still don't get a roadie. You got to move it all yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
He can stick it in his computer bag. It's small enough, you know?
Let me see if I can have something in
mind. And just let everybody know, he's not really that loud. It's controllable. It's really, for studio work, it's perfect.
That's the first thing I play if I gotta like play on random gear. It's like, hey man, if it sounds anything like Joe Walsh, I'm good. You know,
how you doing?
Well, so you also have the Tracy Guns and the League of Gentlemen.
Yeah, the League of Gentlemen, that's my band now, and it's the most self-indulgent thing I've ever done, hands down. Our first record is music I pretended to that I was writing before 1973. You know, it's the best thing I've ever done in my life. And I'm just started mixing the second record today. And actually, you heard some of it today. And it's the same. The band is themed that way. It's music pre-1973. You know, it's influenced by music pre-73. It's all about guitar tones. It's all about mellotrons. It's all about organs. It's all about Ludwig drums. It's all about room mics. It's all about tape. It's all about the stuff that I like and people my age like. And it's the most satisfying creative process for my own music I've ever done. You know, I'm engineering, producing, writing, calling the shots, making records that I want to listen to. And it's nice because I actually listened to the first record. You know, it took me 2 years to do that record. And I thought, oh my God, I'm going to ruin it. I'm going to be sick to death of this thing. And I love it, you know. And the new one, it's the same thing. It only took 6 months to record.
Mm-hmm.
And started mixing today, and it's fantastic.
When do you think it'll be out?
I have a deadline. It's got to be done by the first, so probably summer.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
it's
cool.
On Shrapnel Records.
Is there a way you can play us like a lick or two from the actual new record?
Let's see.
Give people a little sample?
Yeah. I was thinking about bringing one. I'm trying to think. This my friend, because my friend Mitch wrote a song for the album that's unbelievable. The guy that made the guitar, so I want to play the song on the guitar. I'm not going to remember it right now because you put me on the spot. But it has this very overdriven sound, right? I mean, It sounds like LA Guns Sex Action a lot, actually. It's not very riffy, but it's definitely got that attitude we were talking about earlier, that kind of Pete Townsend, almost punk rock.
Yeah.
You know, so that's something, but I have to keep the rest of a surprise because it's a themed record.
Okay.
So no, if I play something else, then people go, hey, I know what he's doing, and I can't give it away yet. But I really want to. I've been working on it for 6 months already.
Well,
believe me.
It's just gone by too fast, and we haven't even just just touched the surface.
Well,
it's already.
Well, before we go though, I did want to ask. So in December you played with Phil Lewis.
Yeah, I did.
Is there going to be any chance you guys are going to be out playing together?
I don't think so.
Just kind of a one-off thing.
Yeah, it's more special that way. You know, I think LA Guns was never that big of a band. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, in my life, it was huge. But as a moneymaker, as something that you could do as a profession. In 2014 and beyond, it's not possible. So it's more fun to, you know, show up at a club together and, like, make the people that are there excited. You know, and then it's good for us. And it's a smart thing to do it that way. And that way we don't get sick of each other and we can do it every so often. You know? Yeah.
Well, you've got a Facebook page for Tracy Guns. And then... something in the neighborhood of, what, like 200,000 likes or something?
I got a lot of people, but Facebook, they don't let you reach your fan base. It's weird. You know, they want you to pay, you know. But it just, like, changed radically. Like, a month ago, I could post something, and it would reach, like, 20, 30,000 people. And then, like, 2 weeks ago, all of a sudden, it reaches, like, 3,000 people. So they turn the filter up.
Wow.
Everybody again. Yeah, I mean, it's weird.
Yeah, Zuckerberg doesn't have enough money. He needs more of yours.
Yeah. But the thing is just so I don't get cut off of Facebook, I will pay when the record comes off to put on my album.
Well, we definitely want to hear the record. Have to come back on.
Absolutely. You definitely have to come back.
Well, I'm doing a couple things. Let me just I'm doing an album with a woman named Megan Kinney, who is incredible, like Emmy Lou Harris kind of melody, kind of.
Oh, cool.
It's folk, but it's very mystical, magical Led Zeppelin at the same time. It's very, very cool, and she's a badass. And then her and I are also scoring and doing the soundtrack for a musical movie called The Untethered Kind, which is supposed to have a Christmas release. So I'm doing way too many things every single day right now, but it will end in a month, and then I'll be bored.
Well, when you come back, we'll have.
Oh, and I'm playing the Rainbow this Sunday for their 42nd anniversary.
Oh, wow!
And that's a free show.
Oh, okay.
Oh, nice.
But when the album's out, if we could, it'd be great to have you back. And then, Andy, maybe we can get all three of the heads and have them try go through them all.
We'll let him work on the recording thing. I'll work on the amplifier thing. We'll make another.
There you go. There you go.
I want a wall of these little guys in here just to take.
Yeah.
That is just amazing.
That's it.
Well, before we go, Tracy, just to give you a little warning, would you mind playing us a little something if you want to do some setup there? But before we go, just to mention, we want to thank our sponsors, Sweetwater.com. We also want to thank Andy at Samson Technologies for Tracy in.
Yeah.
And next week we have Jennifer Batten.
Oh, whoa, I love Jennifer.
What? No way. Wait a second.
She's right.
Heck with Tracy. Jennifer's great.
I know.
She's on the phone, though, so she's not in studio.
She's so
in
good.
She just got back from Europe on a tour.
This kind of sounds a little Power Man 5000 going on right now.
Yes.
That's a shred for my LA Guns fans. That's a Gary Moore lick I'm stealing. And that's some weird Indian Richie Blackmore stuff. Jimmy Page does this a lot. E minor into E major. Back to minor. Ooh. Gotta love the Jimmies.
Okay, thank you, everybody. Thank you, guys. It's just one of the best shows we've ever had.
It's a good time, right?
Good show.
Yes, and we will see everybody next week, and we'll have you. We definitely have to have you. But this is we just touched the tip of the iceberg of your stuff. It's
I'm old. I'm not a veteran.
do you want to give us a little bit of the Joe Walsh out there and take us out?
Man, Joe.
Good night, everybody. Thank you so much.